Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we are listening to Sister Seta, Aset, and she is an author. She has written many books here on chemistry, and tonight we are going to be listening to her. She's reading from her book, Gathering of the Vanguard. And for those of you that's not familiar with Sister Seta, Aset, she is a true believer in the metaphysical side of reality. She has written for such publications as Helium and Science Fiction magazines. Her mentors were Dr. Delbert Blair and Bobby Hemmett, just to name a few. And so now she's working on putting her books on the big screen. And so she's doing her audio books here for us, and she's reading her books to us. So relax and enjoy. She does great work. Sister Seta Aset, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Sister Bev. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Thank you.
You know, every time I hear that intro, I feel like my people is getting ready to go into battle with their minds and with their souls and with their spirits. I just feel it. I feel like there's a big victory for us coming on with what we have to work with, you know, with our spirits and our strength and what we can do without even picking up a weapon. So I just feel good. I just feel good when I hear it. I'm just ready to go.
It does. It do. And it just, it's like rising, you know. You're right.
Exactly. It's like a, you know, it's like a rising. Oh, I love it.
Well, Sister Setta, tell us what you want to tell us about, if you got any disclosure, anything you want to talk about before we get into the book.
Yes, I just wanted to let the audience know that this is for entertainment purposes only. There is some truth within the novels where you can go online and, you know, look it up and check it out for yourself. But I mainly wrote the truth around fiction so that I can capture our minds and, you know, the type of people who we are, which we are creative. We are very creative, and I don't want us to lose that. So, you know, I put some of that around truth. So you can create truth out of fiction. You can do anything you set your mind to it. And in the beginning, you know, I would say, like, okay, take for instance, if you want to build a particular table or you want to build a particular chair or something like that, it's not truth or not real until you actually build it, until you put your creativity to work and build it. Then it becomes a reality. So I like to look at it like that.
Okay. Well, that's what it's about. And so now this book that you're reading from tonight, this is your second book. How many books do you have all together?
Actually, it's 5 going on 6. And right, even though I don't live on the 33-degree parallel when I did create these books, of which I'm getting ready to move back to the 33-degree parallel, which is where I did spawn a lot of my creativity down there.
Okay.
And I'm not too far from it. I'm about 10 miles from it, from the actual parallel. I'm going on into the 6th book, but this is the 3rd one out of 5 right now. The first one being The Chemistry, The Bright Light, which we have already read. This one is the second, Gathering of the Vanguard. Number 3 is The War, which is very exciting. The 4th one is 9X, and if you grab that, if you think about that title, 9X, it means a whole lot of different things. And then the last one is In the Realm of the Gods, which we are the gods. So, you know, that last one is really exciting, too. It's the finale. Big finale.
Right. Okay. Well, it's good. I mean, what I've heard so far is very, and I can really see the metaphysics in your writing, because when you read it to us, you know, I can see it. It jumps out at you. So you did. Excellent. And I can't wait till they get on the big screen so we can look at it in a different dimension.
Well, I'm about to send my my elevator pitch to 100 Winchester Circle in Los Gatos, California. That's 95032. If everybody could, you know, put it out there in the ether for me. 100 Winchester Circle, Los Gatos, California, 35032. I'm sorry, 95032 is where I'm about to send this elevator pitch.
Okay. All right.
So I do think we ended on, I think it was part 81, and we're starting on part 83. We did part 82.
Well, the second lesson. I think we did 83 because I got down the second lesson.
Yeah, we did that second lesson. Where we were on the second lesson was, I think they went to, I think they threatened Zuri and the Dogon. I think that's what they did, where we stopped at. And we talked about
82 now.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I think we're going, okay, we did the second lesson. So, yeah, we're counting down to 82.
Okay.
So, yeah, I thought I had that right there. Okay. We're going into part 82, the truth.
Okay, and so can you kind of give people, just bring them up to speed to, you know, without going through the whole book, but just maybe the past chapter that you were in, and then we can go right into 82.
Wow, a lot has happened, a lot. Okay, I'm going to try to break it, I'm going to try to make it as compact as I can. There was a couple of groups that is trying to get to the Dogon to get to Femi and her family because they're feeling like they're some type of a threat, you know, that, you know, that they're looking for the Messiah within our community. And they're looking for them, and they're sending our own people after our own people. And thinking that, you know, there's some type of Buffalo Soldiers type of folks that's going after our own people like they did, you know, our people back in the days when they first came over here. So that's what they're doing with her. So they're in Africa right now, and they're trying to infiltrate the Dogon tribe, in which they couldn't do. So Suri and Femi took them down, and they don't hurt anyone. You know, they either erase your memory or take things from you and make you realize you are dealing with something that's supernatural, that's metaphysical. And it's more than a bullet. It's more than a weapon. You can't touch it. So right now, this is where we are. They've sent the military twice after them. And Femi's mother is hoping that they didn't hurt anyone physically, you know, and just, you know, make sure that they understand that you can't touch this. You know, it's something totally different, something that man, so-called man, can't deal with. So that's where we are right now.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Okay, so now we're starting on part 82, The Truth. Okay. Once it was out what happened there, most of the Dogon, along with the family, departed from the village. The remainder of the villagers would arrive later. It was not a safe place to be if the military was tracked back to the source. So their plan was to go to the foothills of Ikor, Great Mountain, the Mountain of the Moons, and stay there until it was time for departure. Femi had gone ahead to the land to prepare for their arrival. As they began to leave, Leo asked Suri, "Tell me the plan again." "Femi and I are going to get you, Ayera, and the people to a safer place at the mountain. We have ventured there many times, and we found a place fitting for us all. We have set it up where we will be comfortable and out of sight at the same time, along with the Hogan master. If the time comes, we will know how to protect ourselves. Ayera and I have meditated and initiated the practice many times, so there is nothing we can't do together. Besides, I have gotten older and not in the best shape physically as I was in the past days. So mentally, using my mind is stronger than using muscle. We will be ready," Leo replied. So what he's telling Suri is he's gotten old, but he understands that using your mental power is more stronger than fighting. So that's what he's saying. "Okay, I have gathered everything I think we're going to need, but I feel there's something I'm forgetting," said Ayera. "Mrs. Knight, if it is material, then it's not going to matter. All that is here and the things you think you'll remember will be of no use to us. So if it's a piece of clothing, shoes, jewelry, anything of the sort, leave it. Only take what you will need to survive for a few months." And then she says, "Oh, I remember. It was a picture of me, Uncle Diju, Aunt Maymay, and Rupa, Femi, and of course you. My darling Leo, I am taking it. at least I'll have a few more months to enjoy it. So apparently this picture was one she took before her uncle and aunt was killed by Sergeant Greer or General Greer. And I think that was back in the last chapter as well. So she had a picture of them, so she was taking it. But anyway, let's go on. When Ayura ran back to the earthen house where she and Leo resided, Zuri said to him, "Do you think she'll be able to make the transition pretty easily? That lady has more strength in her bones than you know. This is her homeland, her family, mother, uncles, aunts, were all here once upon a time. She was born in the United States, but her roots are here. It's in her blood. She is a proud African, and so am I. I didn't know her family history. This makes me feel confident that she'll make it perfectly. The more power we wield, the better our defenses will be." Leo asked Ayura, "You have everything all packed now?" "Yes, and I have my picture. Even if I only have one of them, I will cherish it while we are still here." They loaded most of their belongings into the 19 trucks that they had hidden behind a camouflaged barrier. The trek to the Congo and Uganda to get to the Mountains of the Moon would be a test to Amma, for it would be a long and arduous task driving 2,065 miles with a group this size. Hoping they wouldn't draw attention to themselves, they knew they might run into many obstacles when traveling through the mire of the Nubians and visitors when the armada was observed, how they were perfectly lined up in a row and not missing a beat. During the day, the hot and dusty roads was almost unbearable, but the tests the Dogons put forth before its subjects was many times greater a challenge than any dust bowl they come across. It would take a few weeks before they reached their destination with all they were transporting, and they spiritually prayed all the way there. So far, by all that was universal, there were no obstacles that stood in their way. Occasionally, the only mishap was many flat tires that were easily repaired. When their destination was reached, there was a man standing guard at a gate that surrounded a compound where you could not see inside. It was comprised of a black 4-inch thick steel metal fence with bolts riveted tightly in it to hold the weld together. The Dogon blacksmiths forged this fence together over the years that was made mainly of scrap metal recuperated from old railway lines and car wrecks. He walked up to the lead truck and looked inside. Zuri said, "Ati mi peta babka, gatekeeper, open your gate for me." He motioned to Zuri to drive through the dirt path. He repeated this action until the last truck was waved in. He looked inside of the last truck, but did not recognize Leo. He called on his walkie-talkie, describing the identity of the man in Sumerian. Femi reported back to him that the man was her father and her mother together in the truck. He apologized to him and motioned them to go forward. From the time they were allowed through, they drove another 4 miles deep inside the camp. The camp had been in preparation since the birth of the baby, Femi. So they were fixing this camp before she was born. Okay. There was ample parking on the woody 90-acre lush land with bamboo trees and all kinds of wildlife surrounding the open area. The main cabin was very huge and came equipped with a large cooking area and living quarters. Each of the 177 cabins held 8 beds each. The Dogon children occupied 15 extra cabins of their own. Stationed off from the living area was a 40 by 30 foot command post. It was behind closed doors, and the only person who had permission to enter this building was Femi, Zuri, Leo, Ayera, and the chief Dogon. It held modern radio transmitters, cell phones, big screens to monitor the surrounding area of the grounds, and a working feeder board. Excuse me. There were no weapons, for they themselves were the weapons. Once everything was unloaded and all things were in its place for working and working, Femi and Zuri set out from the encampment and backtracked to Bangadera. They wanted to be as thorough as possible to make sure no one knew where they were or if they were followed, for in their hands, they were responsible for the enlightened ones. The people and her parents knew they would be away for weeks, maybe months on end, for they were also told by the god, Amma, that a trip to the Americas and the circling of the globe was on the agenda to seek out more conscious ones. Leo was left with the responsibility to monitor any and all traffic in and out of the compound, whether it was by vehicle or by command post. In their hands, Ayera and the chief Dogon were responsible for the well-being of the people. When Femi and Zuri returned from knowing that they were not followed to the mountain, a ceremony was held in their honor. The two courageous young leaders were setting out on a journey that would be a dangerous undertaking, but they were wished a clean and victorious mission by the people. They were to summon and inform all of the conscious and enlightened ones to go to the encampment and wait there until it was time to leave. Ki Am Idu Anu Salamu. May the spirit of the ancestors be with you. Aramamu MQ, with love and power, said the Hogan. From the camp, they drove to Narani, Niger. Once they were confident that no one was speaking or asking about the convoy that came through these areas weeks ago, they ditched their vehicle in a private off-road wildlife park, and with the spiritual life waves of their souls and their pineal glands, they developed and manifested themselves into a pair of condors. They flew until they reached the restroom windows of the Bandiagara Airport in Mali. They regressed to themselves as male and female in separate restrooms. And together, they met at the information desk and asked to have access to their lockers that was set up months ago. They emptied out all their money and the many different passports they had placed there upon their return. After the money was retrieved, the two purchased tickets to Peru, South America, to visit the Nazca Lines. When they arrived, they rented a jeep and traveled inland to a little-known village near Nazca City, where they were greeted by the people. During their talks in the shanty of the elderly black leader, they informed him to begin the ritual of the few Nazcas who would be leaving for the procession back home. It was agreed they would arrive at the Mountains of the Moons tonight through metaphysics and their conscious abilities to manifest in different forms. From there, Zuri and Femi drove on to Brazil. There, they were to repeat the same formulation of seeking out the enlightened ones until they ran upon a wise man. While there, they came across an Aimaku, who they met in the village of Katur, who was spilling over with black magic melanin. He could tell the future as well as the past pertaining to the Olmecian Mayan calendar from the date of December 21, 2012. He pointed at Femi and said, You are the one who gathers the souls to go back to Amma in the coming at the end of the world. The calendar in this form of man knows it is not correct. We have been living on this planet in the past for too long now. It's time to leap up in the correct time in which our ancestors knew it to be. Queen Femi, you know the time, and it has come. He took her left hand in his and bowed before her. When he stood up and rested his eyes upon Zuri, he wrote in the dirt a tale of a woman who lives in the city of San Martin de las Carimes, north of the Teotihuacan in Mexico, who bore a king 30 years ago to reign beside a queen from Africa. They were to bring the chosen people together and depart to another dimension, leaving the past earth behind to swallow up its corrupt souls once again to start over many millennia away from now. He stated that some have gone on and are waiting for them to arrive. Zuri knew the man would direct him to this woman because 30 years ago, he sensed it was the country he was born in. Please direct me to this woman. I need to know her whereabouts, said an excited Zuri to the Aimaku. She is a descendant from the Olmecs, and her husband was a Nazca. He has departed this earth, but she still has breath in her and is waiting in old Mexico for you. She knows you are coming, for she holds the power of the Creator's dust in her. He gave him his gratitude for giving him this information and said in departing, Sinetbi, farewell. The two quickly left the man and his people and drove north straight through the South American peninsula toward Mexico through the Panama Canal. Without fear, for Zuri and Femi were now on a trip to find his origins and to put his soul to rest. Heading towards one of the cities designed after Orion's belt, some people continued to live close by, where they existed there thousands of years ago, and his mother was one among them. They both were equally excited to finally be with her. On the way, the light of the star Sirius guided them ever closer to the city, where they spent a night at a nature lodge to rest up for the homecoming of once again being in the presence of his Nibet. Lying near each other, Zuri said to Femi, imagine my mother being an Olmec and my father a Nazca. Do you know what that means? It means that I have twofold of ancient blood flowing through my veins. And you, Femi, a direct descendant of the Dogon and Akhenaten from your mother. It's no wonder we have given this task. It's no wonder we have been given this task, this directive to carry out from our creators. And to think I was skeptical of everything you said to me when I met you. You saved my soul, and I love you for that. Femi smiled shyly and replied, we are going to visit the Anasazi when we get to New Mexico and send many of them to the mountain. They are my father's people, fourth generation. She never returned the sentiment of love for him, although in her heart she loved him just as much as he loved her. But before she told him, she would wait for the ceremony of the jump of the joining to take place, and would profess her love for him then. Rising up before the sun, Zuri softly touched his soul mate and said, "Wake up, beautiful. It's time for us to go." She stretched and rubbed her eyes and said, "I'm ready. You realize we have been fasting now for days. I need juice. How about you? As soon as we get on the road and stop somewhere, I could use a big glass of acai berry myself." After they stopped for the juice and fruit, an old metal sign pointed northeast to the small city called San Martin de la Paremedes, next to Teotihuacan, which was not far ahead. There was no law enforcement in this part of Mexico, so Zuri stepped on the gas in the Jeep and sped his way to the city in less than 30 minutes. When they entered the town, they saw no one present, but as the car proceeded closer inside of it, the people began to slowly emerge from their safe havens. Scientists and archaeologists were the only people they saw on a regular basis, who constantly tried to learn why this city held mystical powers within itself. Visitors were far and few between, and from out of nowhere, Zuri stopped suddenly to avoid striking an elderly woman who mysteriously walked out in front of the car. She had solid white hair that framed the front of her face, which was covered by a flaming red scarf. She slowly labored to the side of the car where Femi sat and asked, "You've come to take us back." "Yes, that's right. We are here to take you back. I must go and gather the few who will be making the pilgrimage." She scurried off toward a large dome-like structure that sat directly across from where they were parked and returned with 20 to 40 souls who would be joining the others at the mountain. Before Femi could say a word, the woman who obviously was their Aimaku, another woman came forth slowly from behind the crowd and said, "Maru, Hadu, Hadu." She fell to the ground in a lifeless heap, crying and smiling at the same time, very happy to see her child at last. "Omum, mother, I have waited so much to know who you were and what happened to you and father. Oh, my precious Netjer, thank you, thank you." She told him they placed their newborn baby outside on the step of a Mexican embassy in the United States in early April of 2010, and attached was a note to their little one's blanket stating that they had to leave the U.S. and return to Mexico because they could not take proper care of their child. It said, "Please give this child love and care, for he is to have a very important role in the future." The crime in North America was rising at great length. The law drastically changed for illegals, and if they were caught, there would be a harsh penalty to pay. They stated that they received a stern warning not to return and was soon deported back to Mexico. Now, I have to stop there, Sister Bell, because I wrote this back in 2012, okay? Right. I didn't know all this stuff was going to happen. So it's just weird. But these were black Mexicans. Yeah, these weren't the ones that looked Spanish or whatever. These were black Mexicans. These were black people.
Okay.
So, yeah, but anyway, okay. I didn't know that was going to happen. So let me go ahead. Okay. "We were only trying to make a better life for ourselves and our son." They held on to one another for a while before calming down to talk. "I've often wondered who you were, what I was first told. My adopted parents never said a word about this. It was only when we met another Aimaku that said this is where you would be waiting for us, and he was right. Your father and I knew you would be a king. It was shown to us by Orion. We knew we had to get you away from here to join with your queen someday, even if it meant for us to stay behind. I am here now, Mother, and you will be going back with us. I know Father is there waiting for our return. Now listen to your queen while she explains what you all must do in order to join with the others, he said while releasing her from his arms. Follow the Aimaku's direction to join as one to the mountains of the moons in the motherland. Manifest yourselves in spirit so that you arrive together. You must become aware of your third eye to see your destination. This is something you have practiced and believed in from the day you were born. Soon you will be returning back to the day you were born. Soon you will be returning back to the day you were born. Sinitbe, farewell. Zuri kissed his mother and they held her once again in his strong, manly arms and reassured her that he would never leave her again. The group returned to the dome they had appeared from and went inside. Femi and Zuri returned to their jeep to move on to the next gathering. And before they could get back to the main road out of town, there was a great flash of light emitting from the structure's portals. It was then they knew they were on their way to the mountain. The United States is the next destination. We must be very careful going there. Unfortunately for us, the president may have our pictures mounted up all over the continent, she said. I'm sure he does, especially if Edwin has his say in all of this. He was reminding himself to stay humble for the fact that they were gracious enough to take him in, care for him, educate him, and give him a proper home when he had no one else as a child. Knowing what he was feeling, Femi said, that's very kind of you to consider them as your parents. We are here to love the people who would not allow evil into their hearts and souls, as said in the Ma'at. Even if your parents do not believe in what you are doing, they don't know any better at this point in time in their lives. All we can do is love them. I understand perfectly. It's too bad I was not in my element to teach them any better. You didn't know who you were, so don't feel like you have failed. You have just begun to see the potential that's within you. You were chosen long ago to be my strength, as I was chosen long ago to lead by my mind, soul, and spirit. I need you to share your soul and spirit with me. I am here to make the rules of the land. You are here to initiate the law of the land. We are together to work synonymously as one being within. And in stating that fact, I suggest we alter our identity and make a face exchange. We have the ability to use very powerful mind control to look like someone else to whoever we face, as opposed to what we look like to each other. This is the only way I see us getting to the others as safely as possible. And as we go on, I'll explain what that is. When we see the 5-mile marker to the border, it is then we need to change and prepare ourselves for the journey ahead, he replied. Soon the two were 28 miles outside of South Texas, but still inside of Mexico, when they were stopped by a menacing drug cartel. The 11 men were armed with assault weapons of all kinds, and they were motioning them to stop their jeep and get out. Zuri turned to Femi, and she approved whatever action he wanted to take. He motioned his hands toward their weapons and disarmed them. Their weapons fell to the ground, becoming red like flaming coals. With the flick of his hand, they were all struck by lightning. Realizing they were still alive, they were severely shaken, clothes filled with smoke, some simmering with traces of fire. It was then they all fell to their knees and prayed in Spanish that they appreciated him for sparing their lives, and they would never participate in the continuation of being part of a cartel again. They were repenting before Zuri and Femi. They knew in their hearts they had experienced and survived something no other man in his lifetime would ever see. And if they told this story to anyone else, they would deem them loco. They promised them they would voluntarily disappear forever. Like the queen and king they are, they spared their lives and told them to never kill or harm anyone as long as they had life within themselves. The promise was made, and they ran away like the wind. Soon, the sign of Texas came into view. "Welcome to the Lone Star State," it said, "where all things are big." Needless to say, the sign was right, for they were approaching a huge checkpoint with 50 to 60 or so men and women for all traffic coming in and out of the two countries. By this time, they had changed their appearances. They were Caucasian at this point, with blonde hair and blue eyes, with passports to match. "Please stop your jeep." Zuri stopped slowly for the trigger-happy guard. They both got out, and Femi walked around to Zuri and put her arms around his waist. They stood there close together while the guards were searching their vehicle with all types of surveillance equipment. When they didn't find anything of concern, they brought the dogs out to make one last sweep. All was in order. Even the passports reflected their images. They were free to go. Since they were in the United States now, Zuri suggested that it would be safer if they continued to use the chameleon view to carry out their task at hand. Femi agreed. Stopping in Mississippi, the two rented a room in a very nice and exclusive hotel for, quote unquote, whites only for the night. They wanted to experience firsthand how the other half lived. Their minds were exhausted as they lay down after their showers, he in one bed and she in the other. But before they drifted for the night, they meditated and engaged fully in their ritual. All was well for a few hours until they heard several loud bumps against the wall from the opposite side of the room. It startled Zuri, and he asked Femi, "Was she okay?" "I'm fine, but I'm afraid whoever's on the other side of that wall may not be. I'm going to see what's happening. You coming?" "Yes, I am. Hold on. Let me get my shoes." When they opened their door, a young black woman came busting out of the door next to them, half-dressed, and a white man followed her, beating and kicking her. She was screaming for dear life. Zuri raised his hands and stopped him in midair as he raised his fist to strike her again. Femi picked her up off the concrete walkway and shuffled her into their room. Zuri held the man powerless out on the walk until Femi decided what she wanted to do with him. "Sister, what's going on with you?" The woman was sobbing uncontrollably and trying to catch her breath at the same time. trying to get a sentence out was a job for her. Between the pain of the assault and the blows she took, she was happy someone came to her rescue in the nick of time. That was a miracle within itself. But when she took a second look at Femi, she wondered why this white woman was calling her sister. She gave Zuri the same puzzling look, wondering why two white people would help her. This was not registering in her mind. Femi realized that she and Zuri had taken the chameleon to bed with them. But that was okay. They were going to stop this woman's pain once and for all. I want to thank you both for helping me. I'm having a bad time right now, and I'm going through some things. I needed money, so I went to bed with him. I didn't know he wanted me to do some things I didn't want to do, and I was not having any of it. Please, I want to go home and try to forget this ever happened. So you are going to wait until tomorrow night and do it all over again? Asked Femi. I appreciate what you both have done, but what I do is my business, she retorted. You are kidding, right? You do know who you are. You are a beautiful black woman, and what you are doing is not in your DNA. It's not your character. That's what's wrong with us today and yesterday. We do not love ourselves enough to care. We think we have to be just like them to be accepted. But we are more than that. We are kings and queens. You are a precious gift to mankind. A black woman is a goddess on this planet. Weren't you taught that? She didn't answer her. Femi handed her a warm, wet towel to wash away the blood that was running from her nose. While wiping away the last of the tears, she replied angrily, not to be disrespectful or hateful, but how are you going to tell me about myself when you are who you are? Have you looked in the mirror, ma'am? Do you see what I see? I see a white woman who helped corrupt our black men into thinking that you are God's gift to man, that the meaning of beauty is you. I had a husband once, but guess what? He left me for one of you, so don't tell me a damn thing about knowing myself. I know who I am, and you don't know blank about me. Zuri, go put him to sleep and erase his memory all the way back to his elementary school days while I deal with this. I think that's punishment enough, said Femi. Zuri walked the man back to his room and shut the door. Femi, on the other hand, said to her, now don't be afraid. Things aren't always what they seem. I'm going to explain to you who I am. My name is Femi, and I am a queen of the Nile River, a queen of the future. My fiancé and I have powers that you'll never understand. But being as you are a black woman like me, you may have some feeling of what I'm saying to you is true and honest. Look again. Look again at me. The woman's eyes bugged out of her head when she took a good look at her. She saw the black beauty of Femi and who she really was when she released her hold on the woman's mind. She couldn't explain what she saw in the beginning. At that moment, Zuri walked back in the room. He was black as coal, and the woman screamed out in the top of her lungs, who are you people? What are you people? Don't be alarmed. We are alike, but only more conscious about who we are. My fiancé and I were destined to be this way many thousands and thousands of years ago. This world, as you know it, will soon cease to exist. Stop doing what you are doing and find something else better in life. But know this. Go to whoever you worship to and pray. We will now take you home where you will be safe. Thank you. After tonight, I need to get home and stay there. Femi and Zuri walked her out of the room and down the walkway to the Jeep. They asked her where she lived. When they pulled up to an apartment complex that had been in disrepair for years, they were greeted with an angry barking bulldog that was tied to a tree. While the woman was getting out of the vehicle, Femi hugged her and touched her head and said, "You will not remember anything that happened in the last 72 hours. Have a very good night." "Thank you for the ride, and I will," the woman said as she walked with an unsteadiness to the door where an elderly man assisted her inside, probably her daddy. After driving off and back to the hotel, they wondered how they were going to ease the ways, their ways of the black magic spirit after this incident. As they lay their heads down on their pillows, they asked Amma for guidance. They relaxed and drifted. Upon waking early the next day, while packing their belongings in the Jeep, they observed the man who assaulted the young woman last night being transported in an ambulance. He was incoherent. They gave credit to what they did to him from two of the seven principles of the Ma'at: righteousness and justice. Taking turns driving, they made it to North Carolina in a day. They came upon the city of Jacksonville. She and her mother knew of a temple that practiced the awareness of the Ma'at and the spiritual awareness of black magic melanin. The door to the temple was wide open when she and Zuri walked in. On the floor, kneeled before them, were seven men and seven women, with five children among them. They were all dressed in white. "Get up, my people. Get up off the floor. There's no need for you to feel no less of yourself, to know your truth. Be proud, be righteous, and gracious. Amma will love you for you. Here is what I need you to do. Lock these doors and take your children's hands. Close your eyes and concentrate to activate your third eye. Focus your attention on the planetary vibration. Raise your frequency and move to a higher consciousness. Meditate and visualize out-of-body travel. With this and a combination of 14 of you, you will go to the mountains of the moons together. And children, be of great help to your parents. The addition of five innocents will get you there faster." "We will, brother, sister. We will see you there," said their Aimaku. They returned to the Jeep after closing the doors of the temple behind them, and a flash of light was seen by some of the townspeople walking by. They thought the two had done a terrible thing to the occupants inside, so they called 911. Femi and Zuri were long gone by the time the police arrived. With guns drawn, they forced the doors open, looked inside, and all they found was an empty congregation and clothes lying on the floor. The eyewitnesses gave full descriptions of their Jeep and the appearance of the two visitors. The law quickly placed an all-out bulletin for their arrest. Okay, Sister Bev, that was it. That was part 82.
All right. Anybody have any questions? You can call in at 323-642-1586 if you was able to see some of the metaphysics of that chapter. What was going on there. And, you know, I think I was telling somebody a couple of weeks ago that, you know, they were talking about the tech, all of this new technology that's going on. But as you was saying in your book there, we are the ultimate technology.
Yes, we are. We have this power to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, and what I was thinking what you were going to say as well, that the technology come from us, you know, and they have to use us in just about everything they do. So, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. And once we get back to it, you know, then that's when the God, if you want to call that, you know, in us wake up. I think that, you know, they come up with the concept of one God, but it's many gods because it's many of us. You know, it's not that one God sitting up in the sky, sitting on a mountain somewhere. It's, you know, it's within us. And when we wake that consciousness up, then that's what your music feels like when it's rising. When somebody's been sleeping, they rise, they waking up, and they rise up out of bed. That's what your intro sounds like.
Exactly. And this is what and this is exactly what Femi Azuri is doing, you know. And I, you know, I hear a lot of times with your shows and programs, and you know, Bro Robert X and Tutmos and all of them talk about, and you know, it's all of us. It's just certain people, it's certain ones that know what's happening out there that's rising up to wake up, because we all are not going to be able to do it. It's just, you know, that's not going to happen, but it's going to be enough of us. And this is what they're doing. They're gathering up all these people that know what's going on and what's happening. That's what they're doing. It's not, she is not claiming to be the one all to know all. She's not doing that. She's just claiming to get everybody else that y'all know what's going on. We don't have to tell you. It's already in you. You know, it's just kind of tweaking it a little bit and waking up, you know, little by little. You're not going to get it all at once. But when you do get it, it's no way you're going to go back to what you once thought. There's no way.
And then you know how they, once you wake up, it taps you into your powers. And that's what they're showing too. You know how they can shape shift.
Yeah.
And that's what they do.
Yeah, because.
You know, when they go ahead.
No, go ahead, Sister Bell, what you thought. Go ahead.
No, I was finished. I was just saying that's what they're doing, and that's what we can do.
Well,
you know how they can turn.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm going to listen. Go ahead.
No, I'm finished. Go ahead. That's all I had to say.
I can't. That was a brother, and I think this was back in the early 1920s. And I know Dr. Delbert Blair mentioned his name quite a bit. And this brother they tried to kill him so many times and he just couldn't be killed. And they even tried to transport him on a plane and they couldn't find him on a plane. And I'm trying to think of this brother's name. And I'm gonna send him to you. And I can't think of his name right now. But he could shapeshift. He could do a lot of that. And this was in real life. This was in real life, and a lot of people think, oh, that's just a trick. But no, this brother did this, and we have the power to do that. You know, there are some of us right now that you can be talking about something else, and then they can get you in a way to where you'll forget all about it. And, you know, we have that power. We have the power to change things. I'm just going to put it like that. We have the power to change a lot of things, and this is what they were doing. And when they rescued this sister, and that was the part, because, you know, that happens quite a lot to us, where she thought, you know, that she wasn't nothing, you know, and she felt like that she had to go with this, you know, this Caucasian man to get anything, you know, and she didn't have to do that. And Femi was explaining to her, sister, you way better than that, you know. There is no way, you don't even need to be with this here fella. You know, you can get it together yourself because you got that power and you got that strength. And, you know, our ladies, I want us to, you know, to be better than where we are now, because it's a lot of sisters. And you know what? I might be going, taking it out there a little bit, but, you know, when we had the love, the music, you know, back in the 60s and 70s where, you know, we loved each other. You know, we had real relationships. And then rap came along and all of a sudden we started being all these garden tools and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, you know, there wasn't no respect between all of us anymore. You know, then all this other stuff start jumping off, and we need to go back to that. And I think that's been, I think that was done deliberately to break us apart. I really do.
Because, yeah, you're right. And like you said, the music back then, it made you touch each other. You know, remember when we had to, when we called it social back then, the guy and the girl, and they touched, you know, they had to hold each other to dance. You know, all that energy, that, you know, and that energy was being exchanged. And we are vibration. And so when you listen to those love music, those notes, you can feel those notes. You know, you could feel it in the pits of your stomach. So it also, that music wakes up things, activate things. But then when when the rap music came out, what they do? They pull us apart. We didn't hold each other and dance. We just pulled apart, turned around, and stuck our butt out. You know, that's how animals have sex. You know, they stick their ass out. You know? So they,
the lower chakra.
You know, so, but we see what's going on, and so we just got to turn it back around. You know, and it's up to the elders, as I call myself, because we've been there. Look at this generation that never knew about social, never knew about touching, dancing, you know, holding each other close and feeling that person energy and feeling the energy from the music and the love vibration just there. I mean, that was something.
And we had conversation to go with that, you know. We could talk to each other. We didn't have our heads stuck in the phone, as Walt the Martian says. So, and Bobby Hemmett also said it as well, you know, when they gave up that black vinyl, you know, with that diamond needle hitting that black vinyl, now you have CD, you know, and they can underline stuff within that CD. Yeah, that, you know, that has a lot to do with, you know, messing with your mind as well.
But the
your soul and spirit
is dealing with the mind. You know, that's what it is. And that's why we see all this technology trying to get your conscious and they going into your DNA and trying to change your DNA. And, you know, it's just diabolical, as they say. But, I mean, we don't have to just sit and take it.
No,
all
we don't.
All we do is activate. That's all we got to do is activate. And there's people out there that know, you know, and they trying to teach some, but everybody, like I say, sometimes if you're ready for it, you will hear it. I forgot what that saying is. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear or something like that. But if you're not ready, you're not going to understand what's going on. But a lot of us is really getting activated. And I just feel like 2020, like Wes say, this is a great time to be alive. I just feel something magical about this energy that's in this 2020 vibration that's here with these 11s and these portals. And I just feel like this is, I look at 2020 as a magical year.
It's coming and it's something that they're not going to. It's coming, and it's something they're not going to be able to contain. It's going to be real hard to contain it. You're going to see a whole lot of aggressiveness, you know, from, you know, these type of people that want to be in control. They're going to get real, really aggressive now. Yeah.
But that's okay. That's what makes you activate.
It's fine. It's fine. I welcome it because when I make up in my mind what I'm going to do and who I am and what I'm going to say, I'm going to say it. And, you know, nothing can stop me from saying it. You know, you do have to have some kahunas to, you know, to come out and say what you're going to say. You got to, you know, and, you know, and I'm like, you know, bro, Robert X, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. If it's, you know, I'm going to come out and say it. I'm not going to hold back.
Well, you know, what, and activating is also brings out the warrior, you know, in people also. So what, and,
exactly.
And the energy that they work on is fear. And so once you know how to rise above that fear, you know, confidence and fear can't be in the same room. And so when you bring confidence in, fear leaving out of the room. And so that's another way. And so when you start getting activating and start rising, then that confidence starts to rise and that fear moves out of the way. Because the fear brings with it, it brings procrastination, you know, it brings bring things here that keep you from keeping that currency, keeping that energy from flowing. It stops a lot of things.
Right.
And once you move that out the way, that energy can flow. And that's what.
Well,
that's
I've
what
never
it's
been
about.
Not. Right, right. I've never been one to not step out on faith or anything else. I just come on out and do it. Even as a child, there was a lot of times when I challenged a whole lot of things and wasn't afraid to back it up. So yeah, you know, if you know that you're able to do that, then you're good to go. Good to go.
Well, the number again is 323-642-1586. If you have a question that you want to ask the author about her book, I mean, I think that her books would be excellent gifts to give during this gift-giving season that we have here. And let them know where they can send off, where you will sign the books for them. They could get an autographed copy of the book. So where can they send off of that?
Okay, all they have to do is go to chemistryfiles.com. That's K-E-M-E-T-S-T-R-Y, files.com. And that's my website. And they can email me there, or they can just email at chemistryfiles@gmail.com. K-E-M-E-T-S-T-R-Y, files@gmail.com. And, you know, just, you know, send me the information to where I can send the novels and have them autographed, and we can go from there.
Okay. Now, how did you get into writing with it, where it's a lot of metaphysics in there? Were you into metaphysics when you were writing your book?
All my life, you know, ever since a small child, I was always curious about everything and all things, and especially when it came to, you know, the quote-unquote science fictional part, which science fiction, we're living in science fiction right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell the difference between what we're living in now and the fictional part, because life is imitating what? Life imitates fiction. Fiction imitates life. So we're doing that right now. But as I was, when I was saying at the top of the program about the 33 degree parallel, I actually lived on the 33 degree parallel. So I'm in the process of moving. Go ahead.
Where is the 33 degree parallel?
The 33 degree parallel basically is, in the South. It's in the South. It's also associated with Africa. And let's see, let me pull up. I'm going to pull up something where I can, you know, help kind of give a description of the 33 degree parallel and, you know, where all things are. And I had it on this map, and you can Google 33 degree parallel. They describe the 33 degree parallel as a lot of things happen worldwide on the 33 degree parallel that's important, or that you could say where the action is, you know.
Okay.
And part of it, and here we go. I have a map here. where I can look at this and kind of give a description of where it is. I think everything is going so slow. They're messing with the internet and they're messing with everything. Okay, let me see. It's North Africa, it's Cairo, it's Birmingham, it's Atlanta, it's Arizona. A lot, you know, they have a lot of, they see a lot of spaceships and things in Arizona, New Mexico.
Okay.
And let me pull it up where I can see it closer. It says the 33 degree parallel is a meridian that orbits the Earth at exactly 33 degrees, which 33 degrees is a very important number. And I know that the brother that reads the numbers, he can tell you more about that. And you know, he can read you the numbers, and it's North, South Carolina, Atlanta, as I mentioned before, Birmingham, I think it's Jacksonville, Mississippi. It runs through Arkansas, I think, Little Rock, Arkansas. And if you, and if you listen to those cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, if you listen to those cities, a lot of things took place in those cities. A lot of important things took place in those cities. And I lived on the 33 degree parallel in Alabama. And you know what happened in Alabama. You know.
Oh, back in
so,
the 60s.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, back in the 60s and all that mess went on. A lot of things went on in Atlanta, you know. And again, Dallas, Fort Worth, where you had. What, who was he 36, 46? No, it wasn't 46. When Kennedy was shot, so, and that was in Dallas, Fort Worth. So a lot of, a lot of things happened on 33. So when I was living there, this is where I wrote these novels, and the information was just pouring in like a bucket. So I think I'm on my way back down there. Yeah.
Yeah, because it seemed like it's timeless because, you know, what you're writing about, I could see it going on now as you speak. You know,
honestly,
the information in the book.
Yeah, I had no idea that we were going to, that it was going to be so important that the immigrants were not let in the country and sent back to where they come from. Now, I didn't, that wasn't going on when I wrote these books. Trump wasn't even in office.
Right.
Wasn't none of that. Obama wasn't in office when I wrote these. So, and I'm, you know, I'm not saying that I can tell the future, which I can't tell the future, but the next books that are coming up has a lot to do with the future. Now, I don't know if all of that's going to go down, because I go up into the future, like I'd say 2049, 2050, 2051, somewhere along in there when the rest of the novels are completed. So I don't, you know, that's a long time from now. And I, you know, I don't know if I'll be here in that job. maybe. But anyway, but I would love to be here to find out.
Find out, but now you have something to measure, because you know when that time do come, you have it in your books. That's why books are so important, especially when they not mess with. That's why when
exactly.
they go in places, they burn books and things like that to keep the information and the knowledge away.
Exactly. Yeah, they have a tendency to do that. Do not want you to know what the real is. And every time they find something, you know, the proverbial they find something, they want to say that, you know, they whitewash it and say that, well, we did that, whatever, which they know they didn't. So they burn your stuff and then they come back around and re-edit your stuff and put it as if they did it or they said it.
But it's in our, we got what they call it on the Akashi records. I mean, it's in our DNA. And I, you know,
the Akashic records.
Yes. And so, you know, they can burn the books, but it was still in us. And I guess and that's why they're trying to go into transgender, and that's why they're trying to go into CRISPR when they start messing with your DNA and your cells. You know, they know that it's in us, but I just feel like it doesn't matter what they do. It's just not going to work. It might work to a certain point, but it's just, I just don't see it working completely.
Well, you can't tamper with nature, because nature's gonna you know, tell you to, you know, go away, because you can't fight nature. You can't change nature. Nature's gonna be there, and we are natural people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing everything they can to change nature, and nature is stronger than synthetic things that man makes. Nature's stronger than that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll try to get rid of a lot of things, but they're not going to be able to do it. It'll never happen.
Right. I believe that also. And, you know, I think that we are galactic people. You know, I think we more than just worldly people. And I think that's also something that is revealing itself too, part of our awakening and part of our rising. So it's more to us than just what we see here, right here on Earth. I just feel like that we're part of the cosmos, you know, the universe. And it's just interesting to see the rest of that part that's been laying dormant.
But the thing, the thing is, the trick is, well, it's not a trick. The reality is getting your people, or getting the people to understand what's going on, because the majority of us is comfortable in our ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if the lights went out, if we had a grid breakdown or the lights went out and you had to go back to, you know, not being able to flush the toilet or running water coming out, what would you do? You know, a lot of people would just, you know, throw in the towel. There's no way they could survive. That's why you've always got to be connected to nature to be able to survive this matrix. Because the reality is that could happen. That is a reality. And are you going to be ready for it? Are you going to be with nature to survive it? A lot of us aren't.
And some people, what it do is, you know, when their back is up against the wall, it's going to force them to activate. And like you say, some will not and some will activate and use their creative mind or God conscious, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
They wouldn't use it unless they were forced to.
Well, and with that said, Sister Bev, those that will be able to do that is already attuned and ready for something to occur like that. I don't think the majority of the people that hasn't gotten in tune with what's happening now is not going to it's not going to be ready for that. They're just not going to be ready for it. They're not going to know. It might kick in to a certain level, but they're not going to be able to finish it out, the sprint out. Yeah, yeah.
But I think that it's a lot of people that are, like you say, they already enlightened, they already activated, but they being still, you know, they not broadcast, they just live. You know how they would have what they call them, sleeper cells, you know, and then when it's time for them spies or agent, when it's time for them to do what they do, then they go head on. But for years, they just act like normal people, you know, and then when it's time for them to activate, then they activate. I think it's a lot of that we have a lot of that going on, where a lot of people are activated, but they just living among the quote-unquote average person. But when the time comes, then it's like, okay, it's time.
Well, honestly, Sister Bev, I'm not, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, I'm not predicting something that will happen like tomorrow or two or three weeks from now, but I do have my bags packed. I've got extra candles. I've got extra water. I've got extra canned goods in my closet. So, you know, I can survive for a time, and I steadily stock that stuff every week. You know, just in case. I'm not predicting that that's what's going to happen, but in that little area, I would like to have at least something ready, you know, to be ready in case anything happens. I do, you know, I am prepared. Yeah, I've got flashlights. I've got, you know, I've got pepper spray. I've got a whole lot of stuff going on here.
Okay, so, you got your arm in there. Okay.
Yeah, and I think we all should have something like that. I call it my little survival pack thing going on. But then, and learn a lot about nature and learn what you can do just in case.
Right, right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, we're down to 4 minutes, and give out your information that where they can contact you or get your book.
Okay, again, that's chemistryfiles.com. That's my website. You can go there and email me from there, or you can just email me at chemistryfiles@gmail.com. That's K-E-M-E-T-S-T-R-Y, chemistry, our DNA, files@gmail.com, and leave me your information. And, you know, once we speak, we can go from there and see how I can send it to you and all the other little extras that, you know, we have to go through with that. Those two are great. You can reach me there.
Excellent. Okay, and so you say you're working on another book, your fifth book or your sixth book. Are you working on that now?
It's called Cosmic Legacy. And, you know, I take that all the way back to the beginning. You know, I deal with the beginnings of the Pangea at the very start of everything. And so I kind of bring it in from there. Yeah, that's what I'm working on. And then also I've got the script. I got the script going on that I just sent out that address, that 100 Winchester Circle, Los Gatos, California. That's 35032. If everybody can just put that out there in the ethers for me, I can do my elevator pitch from there.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you.
And next week,
Go ahead.
I appreciate it. I was going to say next week we're going to be on part 81, the preparation. So I just want to kind of get out there. So when I go back and listen to the show, I'll say, yeah, I'm on point. But thank you too, Sister Beverly. I appreciate
this
time. Thank you.
Thank you. And we appreciate the work that you're doing. Much love. All right, everybody.
Thank you. Much love to
tomorrow.
Everyone.
Okay. Join me tomorrow. Brother Tuckmost will be on. The tech people will be on. We will have our round table. So join me tomorrow, same time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Peace and love.